this is what it looks like. That's all to Ilana.
I know, right? It's hard. Good morning. I welcome everyone to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee this Thursday, March 20th, 2025. There is a quorum present. Co-Chair Nash, may I have a motion to adopt the minutes from March 18th?
Motion to adopt the minutes from March 18th.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the minutes for March 18th are adopted. I'd like to just take a moment quickly to go through the committee protocol. Before we get to the agenda, I would like for everyone to know that in this committee room, everyone must be seated at all times. There will be no standing or sitting in the walkways or the aisles permitted. This is for security purposes. If you need accommodations, always please communicate with the sergeant's staff. Signs are not permitted in the hearing room or at the testifiers' tables. If you have signs that you are carrying, please keep them outside. Clapping and other disruptions are not allowed. Additionally, all testifiers must adhere to the time limit so that we can keep the meeting on time and to hear from as many people as possible. And with that, we will begin our agenda for today, which is an informational hearing on the governor's fraud prevention bill. Welcome, Chair Pinto, to the committee. Take a moment, catch your breath. And is there anything you'd like to say before we begin with testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. No, I'll just say how proud I am to be the House author of this really robust package. I guess I'll just note that it builds on work that we've done in past years as well. And so I'll turn things to the testifiers to describe the package.
Okay. And I'd like the committee members to know we ask that the entire package be put together for a briefing in this committee. There are sections that are moving in separate bills. For example, Representative Elkins is carrying House File 2429, which is the data sharing part of this bill in the beginning. And I am carrying House File 2370, which is a bipartisan bill, which is also the program payments that are that could be withheld for fraud. And so that bill will come before this committee later for movement, but for today, this is an informational hearing. And with that, I will welcome Commissioner Campbell from Minnesota Management and Budget. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Right. Good morning, Chair Cleaborn, Chair Nash, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Campbell, and I'm the commissioner at MMB. I'm happy to be here with you today to present several of our agency partners to present an overview of the governor's anti-fraud package. As you know, the state of Minnesota provides critical services every day for the security, benefit, and protection of Minnesotans. Minnesota is a state committed to helping people, and we're committed to providing services that improve the lives of Minnesotans. Fraud against these public programs is unacceptable. It's not a victimless crime, and it harms the same people that we're trying to help with these services. As the financial stewards of these public funds, we take fraud and misuse of public resources very seriously and are committed to safeguarding public funds. As long as there have been programs aimed at helping people, there have been fraudulent actors looking to steal from those who need them the most. Fraudsters have gotten more sophisticated, and our job is to stay one step ahead of them. Through executive action, budget, and policy, we are taking a holistic approach to equip state agencies with the resources and tools to better detect fraud, take action, and investigate, and importantly, to hold fraudsters accountable.
It appears we're working on technology, so just one moment, please.
The items you'll hear about today fall into three categories. Stronger investigative and enforcement authority, better detection and oversight, increased criminal penalties. I will speak broadly to elements within each of these areas, and then my colleagues and I will provide more detailed information on the specific proposals. To provide better detection and oversight, the state would use AI to compare information and detect Medicaid payment discrepancies in real time, to strengthen EIDBI, or Autism Center, oversight by requiring licensing, to add internal controls and oversight capacity within MMB, and clarify the Department of Education's ability to ensure charter schools compliance with procurement policies. The governor has issued an executive order to integrate the Department of Commerce Fraud Bureau agents into the centralized financial crimes and fraud section at the BCA dedicated to investigating financial crimes and fraud. The proposal also adds investigatory capacity to the Attorney General's Medicaid Fraud Investigatory Unit, which is responsible for investigating and prosecuting Medicaid providers who submit false claims for reimbursement. The package also seeks to provide clear and expanded authority to stop payments and sanction bad actors by enabling agencies to withhold payments from potentially fraudulent actors if there is a credible allegation of fraud, prevent bad actors from getting state contracts across multiple agencies, and to debar entities from receiving state funds. The governor's anti-fraud package includes proposals to create a new theft of public funds statute to increase criminal penalties by 20% compared to current law, and mirror federal anti-kickback law in the DHS space and give the Attorney General authority to pursue criminal charges. Now I'll go ahead and get into the specifics of the proposals. The governor has proposed a range of additional investments here at MMB to meet the public's expectations of our oversight responsibilities related to state finances and state workforce. Highlighted here on the slide are two relevant proposals, parts of this proposal. We're eager to add additional capacity to our internal controls team, especially the opportunity it presents to add more training and assistance with the goal of further building a culture of compliance across state agencies. The additional staff focused on MMB financial policies will allow us to provide better support for our agency partners in their understanding and implementation of these important statewide policies. And with that, I'll hand the next slides to Superintendent Evans.
Thank you. Good morning, Superintendent Evans. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Claiborne and Chair Nash and members of the committee. My name is Drew Evans. I'm the superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and I'm going to talk about the BCA-specific portions of the governor's anti-fraud package. As noted by Commissioner Campbell, on February 7th, the BCA Financial Crime Section and the Commerce Fraud Bureau combined our two entities into one new BCA Financial Crimes and Fraud Section focused at the BCA. This was designed to focus all of our resources to identify, disrupt, and hold offenders accountable for those who wish to commit fraud and financial crimes against our Minnesotans. This will improve consistency, it creates efficiencies across both agencies, and allows us to have a singular focus unit that does not have redundancies and be able to address the broad array of items that we'll be looking at. What this new section will do is focus on insurance fraud, wage theft, theft and fraud in state government programs, traditional financial crimes, and other financial crimes against Minnesotans that include identity theft and other areas. One of the areas that why the reasons that we did this is not only so that we have an immediate impact on those theft of government funds and in fraud in our government programs, but also so that we see people that they're agnostic, that the fraudsters, they don't care if it's a government program or if they commit fraud in another realm. And so we have the unit looking for ways to make sure that we look across the spectrum so that we identify people to provide additional prevention activities by taking them off investigatively in different areas, whatever that might be, whether it's a government program, insurance, or wage theft, or other traditional financial crimes. As part of the governor's budget recommendations, that team is together. They are formed. They are working together. They are taking in fraud cases as we speak through state agencies right now and the other programs that I've mentioned. But the governor's budget recommendations would add two attorneys general and one forensic accountant to that unit. The forensic accountant would assist us with the complicated nature that the evolving fraud schemes that we continue to see across all the different types of fraud that we investigate. And then the two attorneys generals would be available to assist Greater Minnesota county attorneys in these very complicated cases, and then provide feedback to state agencies through the process by assisting our team to help with prevention activities moving forward, and that's listed there. The other piece that Commissioner Campbell noted was theft of government funds statute. We can certainly charge fraudsters for stealing government funds right now, but what this does is it takes the theft of government funds and puts it in its own statutory framework, making it very clear what the law is, what applies, and so that it simplifies our ability to hold people accountable that are stealing government funds. In addition, as noted, it increases penalties for the top areas, really showing the seriousness of stealing money that all of you have obligated for the benefit of Minnesotans across the state. And with that, I will turn it over to the Department of Human Services.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Claiborne. My name is Shireen Gandhi, and I'm serving as temporary commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Human Services. For the DHS components of the governor's anti-fraud package, it's important to start with accurate knowledge of DHS's program integrity work. It's work that necessarily goes on behind the scenes at DHS. We don't want to build new approaches on the backs of speculation and conjecture, but really on the basis of facts. So I want to have this committee keep a few facts in mind. DHS's Office of Inspector General oversees 390,000 providers. 142 of those are entities. In the last 5 years, DHS has conducted about 4,000 investigations, stopped payments to 600 providers, referred more than 400 cases to law enforcement, and recovered more than $18 million a year on average. That's an ROI of about $1.89 for every dollar invested in our investigators. So with that in mind, what are the challenges that we face to doing more? And how does the governor's anti-fraud package address that? On this slide, you'll see each of the items, and I'll share with you the challenge and how it helps. First challenge, the number of providers and payments DHS oversees are rapidly outpacing our staff. The proposal adds staff to program integrity operations with a track record of a positive ROI of $1.89 for every dollar invested. Second challenge, the bad actors continue to get more sophisticated, so we need to step up our game too. We must continue to improve and evolve our oversight and detection efforts as fraudsters evolve their methods. The proposal leverages private sector expertise by funding a contract to conduct prepayment reviews of selected claims before they are paid. This gives us an earlier intervention that we can use before payment withholds. Challenge: it can be difficult to share data across agencies to take action early. Currently, under the Limits on Receiving Public Funds statute, DHS can take action when providers have been excluded by other state or federal agencies. This isn't timely enough. The proposal expands our authority for data sharing to investigative and other relevant data, allowing agencies to act more quickly to protect public funds and not wait until a disqualification has taken place in another agency. Challenge: the bad actors exploit loopholes and shortcomings of our current statutes. For example, DHS may only immediately suspend a license if the license holder is criminally charged with theft for fraud against a DHS program. This proposal expands the scope to include not only license holders, but also controlling individuals, and expand the scope to charge of fraud or theft against any state or federal agency. The proposal also allows for the authority to disqualify people under active investigation for fraud from holding any position of ownership, controlling, or billing for which the background study is conducted. Challenge: the growth in autism services has been growing across the state, creating increased demand for services, and as a result, the number of EIDBI providers has also increased. DHS does not currently have authority to address child maltreatment that occurs in these providers. In the news last spring, there was an egregious abuse case that DHS did not have the authority to act on, and had to wait for local law enforcement to investigate and charge the crime. This proposal establishing provisional licensure allows DHS to provide a faster response protecting children and families. Provisional licensure, which is a step along the path to full licensure, gives us more tools to check controlling individual staff, the quality of care, and the billing practices. Challenge: DHS discovered that substance use providers had billing practices that resulted in some providers providing two time-based claims for the same unit, 1 hour, that partially overlapped. This proposal will provide clear statutory authority to stop this practice. By aligning statute with guidance for time-based codes from the Minnesota Department of Health's rule and the CMS claims manual. And the last one here is a proposal that is in partnership with Minute to leverage technology and use AI to help us with the massive amount of data we have and to use it in new ways to catch the fraudsters.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Tomes, when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for giving me the time to testify this morning for the record. My name is Tarek Tomes, and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services and Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota. Like my colleagues, we are at Minute extremely committed to advancing the state's anti-fraud prevention efforts and really doing everything we can to provide robust technology capabilities in that effort. The request in the governor's budget proposes advancing our fraud detection and prevention efforts by utilizing a proactive, scalable, data-driven approach using modern artificial intelligence and machine learning capabilities. We know bad actors continue to evolve their attack methods, and as technology capabilities evolve, we also need to continue to adapt the ways we combat fraud. This proposal represents a significant advancement of proactive, data-driven fraud prevention at the state and really allows us to continue to take steps towards a more preemptive mode. By advancing the state's data analytics capabilities through the use of data warehouses, we will increase our ability to analyze data from different systems and to do so proactively. This proposal also seeks to invest in market-leading tools and capabilities to proactively analyze enriched data to detect bad actors and suspicious activity and flag that for people. In order to ensure maximum effectiveness, a both-and approach is required. Artificial intelligence is a powerful tool to fight fraud, but it requires both strategies for maximum effectiveness. The proposal is for a pilot to use artificial intelligence to flag anomalies for Medicaid providers through the Department of Human Services. This pilot is a critical first step to build this capability across executive branch programs. With recent advancements in artificial intelligence and data management, now is the time to do more. We have an opportunity to provide new tools and cutting-edge technology to enhance continuing oversight of Minnesota's Medicaid program, safeguard public funds, and establish Minnesota as a leader in data-driven fraud prevention. This proposal builds upon past investments made by the legislature and this body, including this committee, to enhance the way state agencies manage identities of users screening state programs and services. The 2023 legislature made significant investments to build a modern identity and access management system that will support improved identity verification capabilities that over time will enable enhanced fraud prevention across state programs. Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer questions at the end and would like to pass it over to Commissioner Brown.
Thank you very much. And now we have Commissioner Brown from the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tiki Brown. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. The Department of Children, Youth, and Families portion of the Governor's Fraud Prevention Package invests $5.4 million in 26 and 27 and $2.8 million in 28 and 29 to enhance program integrity at the agency. This recommendation includes two FTEs in the DCYF Compliance Office to enhance the agency's internal process controls, grant monitoring, and data analytics to improve oversight of public programs. These positions will expand the agency's capacity to effectively monitor providers and other entities receiving public funding, prevent negative audit findings, and ensure that DCYF meets its statutory obligations to remove bad actors from public programs when program integrity violations occur. This proposal also establishes a requirement that providers use electronic attendance and enrollment record keeping for the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP. The current process does not require electronic record keeping, which results in inconsistent and variable record keeping practices, which is not conducive to effective program integrity monitoring. This provision also addresses an audit finding from 2019 in which the legislative auditor recommended that the state move to electronic attendance record keeping practices. With that, that concludes my testimony, and I'll pass it over to Commissioner Jett.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the committee, Commissioner Jett with the Department of Education.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. My name is Willie Jett, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Education. Thank you for this opportunity to present the Minnesota Department of Education's components of the Governor's Fraud Prevention Program, Prevention and Program Integrity Package. I'll be covering investments and enhancements we are proposing for fraud, waste, and abuse prevention by our Office of Inspector General, as well as investments in the legal team and improved oversight of the charter school sector. After I began as the Education Commissioner at the start of 2023, we partnered with the legislature to fund and set up our OIG team at the Department of Education. In 2024, the legislature passed much-needed clarification and authority around the OIG's mission to combat fraud, waste, and abuse in the department's programs. In 2023, the legislature also passed some critical oversight and program policies for charter schools and in the nutrition space. However, as a continuous improvement organization, we believe that more can be done, which brings me to our fraud prevention and program integrity proposals for this legislative session. First, we are proposing $550,000 annually for three FTEs and software advancements. There will be one investigator added to the OIG team. This position will increase the capacity of the OIG to investigate fraud, waste, and abuse and more quickly address complaints. Two legal counsel positions under our Office of General Counsel will focus on nutrition and charter schools. One position will provide needed legal advice and support to ensure the department's asserting maximum regulatory authority over nutrition program participants. The other legal counsel will ensure the agency is effectively exercising required oversight of charter schools and is addressing program integrity and related challenges. And finally, we propose funding for software advancements to aid the OIG's in-depth investigations into fraud, waste, and abuse by furthering the capacity of the office to track cases and conduct financial analysis of programs. We're also proposing policy for our OIG and charter school program oversight. As the OIG progresses through its second year, we have identified critical areas in last year's legislation to build off of. This includes expanding the OIG's jurisdiction around incidents of theft and abuse, enhancing protections for the investigation process, investigative data, and good faith reporters, improving the OIG's access to program participant records, and enhancing the sanctions MDE has available when the sanctions may be applied, and clarifying rights of appeal. These changes will support a more robust MDE OIG to further prevent fraud, waste, and abuse and enhance program integrity. Our final portion of this package sets further expectations for charter schools by enhancing fiscal oversight, improving transparency, and justifying need. This includes clarifications on state procurement law requiring submission of annual charter school audits to MDE, requiring the recording and publication of meeting minutes of school websites, and market need and demand studies when schools move or amend grades, sites, and programs. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of the Governor's MDE Fraud Prevention and Program Integrity Package, and we strongly believe that these investments and policy proposals will build off of the great work already done, especially in 2023 and 2024, and help combat fraud, waste, and abuse, and improve integrity to MDE's programs. I will now turn it over to my colleague from the Department of Administration.
Thank you, Commissioner Jett. And Welcome, Commissioner Groenvall with the Department of Administration. When you're ready, if you'll state your name and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chair Cleavorn and Chair Nash. I'm Tamar Groenvall, the Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Administration. The governor proposes additional safeguards related to state grants. Specifically, the proposal expands authority to suspend or debar grantees to include potential grantees. This is an effort to prevent entities who have not previously received state funds but have engaged in or been convicted of debarment-worthy causes from becoming recipients of state-issued grants in the future. The causes for debarment include serious issues such as crimes, such as embezzlement, theft, bribery, or falsification of records, among other serious convictions and violations. The proposal would expand the definition of grantee to include potential grantee, which ensures the Office of Grants Management can exercise its debarment authority for existing grantees as well as potential grantees. The governor also recommends requiring state employees to report violations of grants, of grant laws or rules. Currently, the law encourages reporting. The governor's proposal also strengthens the authority for state agencies to share data with one another related to suspected or confirmed fraud in public programs. If the access promotes the protection of public resources, promotes the integrity of public programs, or aids in the law enforcement process. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Groenvall. And with that, those are the commissioners who are on the list for testifying today. Chair Pinto, do you have comments that you'd like to add?
No, just appreciate the to you, Chair, and Chair Nash for the time here, and happy to, and I think the folks here are available for questions as well, so thank you much.
Thank you very much. We do have a few questions. Co-Chair Nash, do you want to begin the questioning or last? Okay. So, Representative Koznick.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I think I just said, ma'am, I'm sorry.
That's all right. You're
just think just more generally questions. I'm looking at the draft here of the bill, just dated 3/14. You know, the governor and the administration has been in office for quite a while. We've been in session for a number of months, and it makes me wonder how serious we are. Just hearing the last commissioner suggesting that state employees are now going to be required to report violations. I mean, that should already be the expectations. If you see fraud happening, whether you're working in state government or in any private sector job, if you see something happening, it pretty much should be expected that you would report fraud or some kind of misuse. And it just kind of baffles me that that's part of the solution is something so simple as that. But more concerning as well, and a couple of the other commissioners was how much money we're proposing to spend when, again, it should be implied if you are at a cabinet level or position, we're looking at MDE spending over $1 million in a biennium for more staff for compliance. The Children's and Youth and Families wants two more FTEs just for compliance. And finally, in 2025, we're asking for electronic attendance records to help prevent misuse. And then investing another $5 million and $2.8 ongoing. It just seems like we're throwing money at a problem, and I don't know how serious we are when we have the bill drafted just very recently and we still don't have a House file number. And I appreciate the efforts and it's a good discussion, but I wonder how serious we really are about this. And I think it's definitely way too late in light of current news of just yesterday about the amount of fraud should have been happening. We should have been combating it a long time ago.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, maybe I'll deal with the bill issue, so just sort of the legislative logistics issue first, but then certainly would like comment on more of the substantive points Representative Koznick made. I'm not sure if you had said this, Chair, before I kind of came running in the room, but this is a combination of a series of proposals that are actually moving to other committees in other ways. Part of the reason for the delay, so this bill will be appearing this afternoon. I received it from the Revisor's Office a little bit too late for it to be introduced introduced prior to that, but what was going on was just they were taking existing proposals and putting it in one place so that this committee, which oversees all of state government, could see the whole package. So I guess I would not want you to be fooled by the date at the top of the page or that kind of thing, because these are actually been introduced in different pieces already. And I will note that this is something that actually has been being worked on, and I certainly heard the Walz Flanagan administration working on these different pieces for quite a while. So, and perhaps the testifiers will be able to comment about, you know, the move to the BCA, the centralized investigation, for example. I think it was a number of months ago now that that was announced. So, but again, they can provide more substance, Chair.
Commissioner Granville.
Thank you, Chair. In the grant space, employees have always been encouraged to report. We're also subject to the requirements by the Office of the Legislative Auditor to report, so that has been and always will continue to be part of our culture and part of our expectations. So a requirement here is not a in any way backing off of that requirement previously and under statute to having employees encouraged to talk to their supervisors and to report it.
Commissioner Campbell, did you want to add something?
Sure. Chairs, Representative Kosnick, just in terms of, you mentioned the cost of the proposals, and the reality is that agencies need capacity, additional resources to do this work and to do it well. We take it seriously, and it would be disingenuous for us to tell you that we could do that with the resources that we have today.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the comments, and I think it is an important topic. It's so important that we created a new committee and a standing committee to do that. So I look forward to the work that they're going to do. I just am suggesting that even in my first year on this committee on the House floor, we had an amendment that only one Democrat voted with me on, that if you suspected some kind of waste, fraud, or abuse, that you were required to report it to the commissioner or the Attorney General's office, and that was years ago. And so I'm just suggesting we're a little bit behind time, and you know, just the dates of, you know, the date of the amendment is actually before the date of the bill that's doesn't even have a House file number in front of us. So you know, we're moving in the right direction, but we're just incredibly behind, and makes me wonder how serious we are about it.
Representative Kosnick, I'm not sure you were in the room when I mentioned at the beginning of the bill that two of the provisions that are actually for state government have been introduced. Representative Elkins has House File 2429, which is the data sharing portion, and I'm carrying House File 2370, which is the program payments being withheld, and that is a bipartisan effort. So there, as the chair stated, Chair Pinto, also serving on the fraud committee as co-chair, is leading this so that we, as a state government committee, can see it in its entirety. Next, we have Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just briefly touching on the last round of comments and questioning. For years, 15th year on the Legislative Audit Commission, and seeing a lot of audits, and there are policies, procedures, and statutes requiring, you know, notification of, you know, when you see something bad happening. Unfortunately, that hasn't been activated in the agencies as it probably should have. On the minute, for years, I've been asking, when they've had suspected fraud, why is there not a common location where agencies can flag entities that are suspected of fraud so that all agencies, when they're looking, can make sure that they're following all the checks and balances? Because last year, I had asked, well, for years I've been asking commissioners what sort of disciplinary action when people aren't following the policies and procedures or just aren't competent to oversee things. And only one commissioner has ever said that they were taking any action to try and train, correct, or address the issue, and that was DPS. And in fact, I asked a I believe it was last year, there was an audit about senior meals. And I asked, how many entities have you seen that you're suspecting fraud from that were also flagged for fraud in CCAP and Feeding Our Future? And they were proud to say only two. Well, frankly, if we're following the procedures that we've had, that should have been zero. And that's why some of the frustration is, why hasn't this been improved in the past? And you can go back, members, and look at those audit hearings. And it's the theme has repeatedly been, why aren't you following the checks, you know, the site visits and all the things that are part of the procedures? Because on federally funded programs, they have requirements, including audits, and state dollars go on those same programs. The feds seem to be able to flag and claw back money from the fraud. Our agencies have not been even close to that type of activity. In fact, our agencies should be finding that before the feds, because the feds are an afterthought when you do the audits required. So if there are procedures that we only do for federal dollars, we should adopt all of those. I haven't heard any discussion here of how we are looking at things that have worked on, you know, from the federal level, from other states, even doing what we say we're supposed to be doing. I wouldn't be so frustrated if year after year after year after year, there are the same things that are being neglected and not done. And I have dozens of state employees who have emailed me about issues on these audits that they had brought to people's attention and were basically told to shut up.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Representative.
But what I want to know is, when is Minute implementing this common location for listing of entities that have, you know, suspicion of fraud and ones that have actually been found to have performed fraud? Because repetition, you can be surprised once, but the second and third time, that's just being stupid.
Commissioner?
Commissioner
Campbell, thank you.
That's okay. There's a lot of us here. Representative Quam. A lot to respond to there. First, let me just assure you that every employee is part of our annual training, and for supervisors and managers, as part of the training that they receive, are trained on how to identify conflicts of interest, fraud, and how to report those issues. And so that certainly is a part of the work that we do. If you are aware of instances that employees have brought to you that we need to follow up on, please tell us that, because we should take action on those things. We need to know them. We want to know that information. We have a very clear no retaliation policy in state government, and you can send them to me, you can send them to somebody on my team, and we will follow up with agencies and make sure that action has been taken on those things. We take that very seriously, and I would just say if information exists to that extent, we need to have that information, we need to be able to act on that. Representative Quam, we talked after a LAC meeting one day when we were presenting a report about this notion of sharing information between agencies. There have been limitations on that in the past, and that's why we are trying to fix that here today, to make sure, to your point, that if there are bad actors that we identify in one agency, that we're able to make sure that things are going okay with any other agencies that may have dealings with that particular bad actor. Now, I can't speak to a centralized place where that's going to be posted, but what we are trying to do is make sure that agencies have the ability to share that information, and then take action to pause payments to those entities until we can figure out what is going on there so that we can make sure that we have a comprehensive approach to this. And the state statute has been limiting in the past, and so that is part of what we're trying to solve. And what I would just say is that we agree with you. I think you bring forward a good point in terms of a problem that we are trying to solve here. Other commissioners may have insight into the posting piece of it, but I can assure you that is part of what we're trying to address here. In terms of learning from the federal government, I mean, I think we do, and I would just say this is a bit outside of my lane because this is not so much an issue that we deal with at MMB, but to my knowledge, other agencies, including the Department of Human Services and the Department of Public Safety, are routinely bringing issues to the attention of the federal government officials. That is part of the work that they do in the OIG and the investigations that they are doing. And so we may not all be aware of those instances as they are happening, but they are happening every day. And if I'm getting that wrong, somebody should correct me, but I think that's how this works in agencies. And so somebody else could give you a little bit more detail or have a side conversation with you about those particular issues. But we investigate, and as needed, we lift those issues up to the federal government. And that's a lot of the issues that you've heard about what's happened in those cases.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I pass that on to the legislative auditor's office because data privacy and a lot of the detailed conversations that would then go through, I want to make sure that data privacy is controlled. Mm-hmm. And that is the one entity where I've got conversations with, and they know that the right people will be interacted with, shall we say. So in any state employees that are concerned that if they email a legislator that it's going to, all this is going to be public, no, we're going to follow the procedures to make sure that it's the right channels. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Our Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you for this bill, and particularly the data sharing provisions, which are pretty tight, and I appreciate especially the calling out of the sharing on lines 1.16 through 1.21, which is really helpful. The one thing I will say about this is that I know this is carried in a separate bill, but I want to make a point about it here. I believe it's carried in the Elkins bill, some deeper dives on data sharing. Many of you in this room may be aware the Governor's Technical Advisory Council meets regularly. Commissioner Tomes sits on that, the Deputy Commissioner, our CISO, all of the folks, and we actually have a subcommittee talking about specifically data sharing. And I want to make this point very clear to everyone in this room. One of the things that has to be said here is that fraudsters are becoming and evolving over time. There were a series of articles by Chuck Johnson, who used to work for the state, that outlines the ways in which the fraud we're seeing today has been morphing and emerging and changing in ways that we never imagined. But one of the things that's really important about that is that for years, our data has been very siloed in the state of Minnesota between agencies. And fraudsters are well aware that is our Achilles heel. And they are using that inability to share data to exploit the system. So I am really grateful that we are working on this. I am really grateful for the Elkins bill. I am really grateful for what's in this bill, because if we do not act, we will continue to see bad actors exploiting these pieces like our Achilles heel in state government, and they will continue to do it, and we will not be able to catch them. Now, secondly, I also wanted to say we have this idea of using some AI tools, which, as the fraudsters emerge, particularly on a technological sense, we are going to have to develop and we are going to have to deploy tools within state government and within the federal government to do a better job of that. And realistically, we are at a place where if we don't do so, we will give the fraudsters the upper hand. And so I just want to underscore the importance of this bill, the Elkins bill, and the series of these bills that the governor has put forward. And I think we need to take them very, very seriously. And with that, I will abdicate my time, but I appreciate these bills and what they're trying to do and their importance.
So we have Representative Davis, Joy, and Anderson, but Representative Nash is asked to go next. I don't want to cut you off. I don't want you to think that I've cut you off, but I would like to go to Chair Nash.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask a couple of questions of the different commissioners up there. So I'll try to be brief. I appreciate the idea that we're going to be looking at different tools. Everybody, and maybe Commissioner Tomes should slide up. Everybody said the word software, which troubles me a little bit because I want to understand how are we going to create a clearinghouse of software procurement that actually works together. And you and I were talking before committee started about the AI, and I'm glad you and I had a conversation before we came into session about AI. The governor and I had a conversation about AI. I'm grateful that the idea that I'd thrown out there is being brought forward here in some pieces and parts. But the profusion of software that I heard, I just want to make sure that we're not going to be sending agencies and departments and commissioners off to buy their own software and not have it be compatible with one another. Could you address that a little bit? And then I'll have a very brief other update. Because we have not found or begun looking at the AI that we would be using, so that's not reflected in the costs that are in here. So if you could maybe just throw or answer some of those questions.
Commissioner Tomes.
Chair Cleavorn, Representative Nash, committee members, great questions and really appreciate that context. From a technology procurement perspective, as you are aware, we procure technology in the executive branch of Minnesota within my office. So all technology procurement goes through my office and our procurement function. That is a really robust function and probably one of the premier procurement functions as it relates to state government across the country. And one of the goals and aims of that procurement function, of course, is to make sure that we are engaging with vendors in a responsible manner and also in a manner that really makes sure that we don't have redundant technologies, that we leverage things that we own to the fullest extent possible, and that where appropriate and when appropriate, that we're engaging in enterprise activities so that we are not having to, you know, not just procure multiple technologies, but also safeguard multiple technologies, implement, integrate multiple technologies. And so that is certainly our goal. The cost reflected in this proposal does include the cost for a pilot program, including procurement of software. We have not identified a solution yet. We've had, you know, pretty broad conversations, including with private sector organizations, as we discussed, in the retail space and in the banking space. These types of technologies are not necessarily new, but the fraud prevention and detection space has certainly evolved over the course of time over the last few years. Consumer fraud is up 25% across the country, not in government, but just in the private sector in general. I think Visa has spent upwards of $10 billion to combat fraud, leveraging technologies by and large. Our ability to from a data sharing perspective, our ability to seamlessly and easily integrate with our income verification mechanisms, with our unemployment insurance data, with birth and death certificate data, and with other ancillary data sources are really things that are at core in building a technical capability that can be leveraged broadly across the executive branch as it relates to artificial intelligence and machine learning capabilities. And we certainly aim to partner heavily with the vendor community and learn from organizations like the banking industry and others that have done this already.
Madam Chair, just a brief follow-up.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Commissioner Grunwald would come forward. Question as you're coming forward. you had talked about and I just wanted to make sure I understood this. So some of the grant vendors you said will be potential for disbarment. If I listened to that properly and read it properly, that would be retroactive. Can you maybe help us look at how you're going to be assessing things proactively so that you can disqualify people as they become a potential grantee?
Commissioner Grunwald.
Chair Cleavorn, Chair Nash. Yes, to clarify, in the state grant space, right now the department has the ability to debar current grantees where under certain circumstances. This would change it to allow us to debar potential grantees. So people who are not yet a grantee but applying. So it is prospective in that way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that was crystal clear because I think it got, there was a lot of use of the word debar and disbar and so on. I just want to make sure that we level set for everybody that we're going to be looking at people as they are coming forward to say, please make me a grantee. We'll be evaluating them and then look at some of their internal control, some of their practices and say, yeah, you're really not going to be somebody that we're going to do business with. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll let the rest of my team go.
Next, we have Representative Davis, or Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Pinto, you're presenting this to us today. What do you think prompted the governor to make this a priority, this legislation?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis. Well, I think it's part of the long, I mean, in the governor's tenure, I don't want to speak too much for the governor, but it's important to the governor that that our state continue to be a state that helps people and provides services to people. And the governor recognizes, I think so many of us do, that when there's fraud in public programs, that's something that goes against that value and is something that is unacceptable. And so I mean, this is part of the continued, you know, if you think about the work that was done in 2019 and in 2023, 24, we did so much last term. And so this is continuing to build on that work.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Did you have anything further?
Yep. Please. Thank you, Madam Chair. But you know, why now? Why make it a priority now and not earlier, like as opposed to when we had a Democrat trifecta?
Madam Chair.
Chair Pinto, if you'd like to discuss the work we did last.
Yeah, no, I sure will. And Representative Davis, it feels a little bit awkward, right, because you're asking me to then speak on behalf of the administration. But I guess what I'll say is that, I mean, just to remind you, yeah, there was incredible work done in 23-24 relating to ensuring integrity in public programs. I got information here about the extensive grant requirements that were put into place, expanding the Office of Grant Management, putting in a new Inspector General at MBE. I see the commissioner here, the pre-award risk assessment, mandatory monitoring, progress reports, a lot of investment in oversight. And I think that as that work goes into place, you know, this is a continuous improvement kind of situation, Representative Davis. We want to make sure that we're continuing to strive to improve all that we do. And so, I think it's, I mean, there was so much done in 23-24, and we're identifying that's even more to do now.
And Vice Chair Davis, I know you weren't on the committee last session, but we also made large investments. One of the largest costs that we had in this committee last year was for modernization of our computer systems. It was really important. I value the question that you asked. Do you have a follow-up?
I do, actually, a few. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you believe that we have a fraud problem in Minnesota right now?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, David says, you know, I work as a prosecutor outside the legislature. So, unfortunately, that job involves people doing things that are wrong. You know, if people were always doing things that were right, then I wouldn't have that job. And unfortunately, I find that people do things that are wrong. And so, whenever we have, I suppose, spending in any kind, private or public, there's going to be people who are going to try to take advantage of that. So, absolutely, there is a problem that we have, and people are defrauding public programs. And unfortunately, that is something that is out there, just like people defrauding consumers. I found that really interesting to hear about the $10 billion spent by Visa on private, you know, and credit cards as well. So there's always things that we need to do. So, yes, there absolutely is a problem we need to address.
Right. And is that it? Okay, well, we have two more of your members, and Chair Nash asked me to wrap this up.
So I just have a few
please,
more.
One more.
So thank you. So, and Representative Pinto, I'll just say your answers last biennium too, you always make me a better legislator by your answers. So thank you for that.
You're most welcome.
I should have asked the question this way. Do you believe we have a problem in a Minnesota state government with reporting fraud?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davis, we're maybe getting, I mean, I what I'll say is, like, again, there's always more to do. I'm noticing, you know, there's a comment earlier about federal programs and state programs. You know, Feeding Our Future, right, was a federal program where state employees at MDE identified a concern and went to law enforcement as was appropriate, and really were taking a lot of steps to try to address that. So, again, I think there's always more to do. Remember, I think we all voted in favor of a bill a couple weeks ago to make sure to expand protections for folks who are state employees or identifying concerns. So there's always more to do, but I don't know that I have particularly unique insight into what you're asking about, but there's, yeah, certainly more to do.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And Representative Davis,
I won't ask any more questions, just a closing statement. I'll just remind you, Representative Pinto, as the Chair of Children and Families last biennium, we brought up fraud quite a bit, so much that it annoyed the members on the other side of the table. And so we were constantly bringing up fraud happening in our state under the noses of state government agencies. And I do believe the governor believes that we have a problem with reporting fraud in the state, because I see the language is being changed from encourage to report fraud to, I believe the language here is required to report fraud. I would have just like us to have seen, made that change many years sooner. When we began discovering all this fraud, especially when the CCAP fraud started coming out, and now we're going to be dealing with that again. But I just want to encourage our governor to do less condemning of Republicans and maybe spend a little bit more time training our state agencies on how to detect fraud as well as reporting fraud. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Next, we have Representative Joy, and we are going to wrap this up in just a few minutes, so please keep your comments short, and then we'll move to Representative Anderson.
Mine is more in comments, and thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Pinto, thank you for bringing this. I think this is too far in the game. You know, I'm in a private sector. We talk about Visa, MasterCard when you upgrade because of fraud going on all the time. I've had to upgrade my tills, my pumps. I haven't had to add staff. I've had to spend money to buy software. But every time I do that to make sure that the guys aren't putting card swipes or cheating the system or changing my all the chip and pin, everything, I don't have to add staff. Here we're asking Minnesotans to fund this program with more money for more staff, because we heard earlier from a commissioner, we can't do this without more money. When I've been in the retail sector my whole life and we've caught people stealing from the stations or what has happened, the answer wasn't, we can't do this. It's like, what are we going to do to prevent this? It wasn't adding more staff. It was to take care of this, to make sure we're not losing taxpayers' money or losing our private money. Checks and balances is what this is about. You know, adding more software for a place close to me, which is Pelican Rapids, Minnesota, has a population of about 2,600 people. They fed 255,000 kids. All that takes is Google to figure out how many people are in that town to figure out how many people you're feeding. You don't have to have new software to figure that out, that there was something going on in Pelican Rapids. That was an issue. That was one of the people that was charged with Feed the Future. 255,000 meals in 1 year out of a population of 2,600 people. So to me, this I think this has good intent. The problem I have is spending more money and rewarding. We have to start using the language, we can. Not we can't without more money. We won't be able to do this. So if this doesn't get funded because we have a $6 billion looming deficit, we won't be able to stop fraud. That's what we were told. If we don't add, we can't do this. So I would just encourage us to try to find other avenues. Thank you.
Chair Pinto, I'm going to let Representative Anderson ask his question and then ask you to address both of those at the same time. Okay. Representative Chair Anderson.
That was the previous stuff.
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members. So indeed, we did receive a audit finding in 2019, and there were several steps required to put in place prior to the electronic record keeping system. So prior in 2021, we actually submitted a report to the legislature outlining our steps on work that had been done. And so there was a statewide provider registration and renewal system that we received funding for in 2023 that needed to be put in place prior to the record keeping system. So now that that will be put in place in this April, we are now ready to move forward with the next phase of the process.
Commissioner Thomas, did you want to say anything?
No, nothing to add to that. Thank you.
Was there a further question, Representative Anderson? All right, please go ahead. Thank you, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and thank you, Representative Anderson. I mean, I think it does tie to some of the prior comments, right? Because it is true that I've certainly heard colleagues bringing up frequently, you know, fraud, bringing us up a lot. I do think that part of what's going on here is that I do think it's important that we recognize the work that, in fact, has been done. I understand that there may be a perception that may be driven by certain things, but we need to recognize that even going back as far as 2019, I was quite involved when there were concerns about the integrity of the CCAP program and extensive changes made, so much so that I can identify several Republican members, both the House and the Senate in 2020, saying, we are so impressed with the work that was done in 2019, building on that. So this is an ongoing process. I guess I would encourage us to look at both the details of the work that was done and then also the details of the proposal here, just to the point that was made about potentially adding staff or not. I guess what I'd say is let's look at each one of these things and ask ourselves, would doing this thing, in fact, require some additional personnel? I think that the answer you're going to find if we dive into the details is, in fact, yes. But happy to continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And with that, I believe we have concluded all of the testimony and questions that we had. I'd like to thank all of the commissioners for coming here and Superintendent Evans for being with us. As this was an informational hearing, there is no bill to lay over at this time. But thank you very much, Chair Pinto, for your presentation. Next, we'll move to House File 1470. Do you want to go? I'm open to whichever.
I have another one.
All right. Representative, Chair Stevenson, we will move to House File 1310. Since you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 1310 be before the committee. And I will move that we will lay it over for possible inclusion. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. When you're ready, if you'll begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1310 is a relatively simple technical housekeeping bill. Several years ago, we passed into law a statute requiring state agencies to consult with the tribal governments that share geography with Minnesota. That statute passed before the Office of Canvas Management was created. This just adds the Office of Canvas Management to the list of state agencies that have to consult with tribal entities, which in practice they are already doing.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or discussions? Representative Kosnick.
Well, we spent a lot of time, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevens, Chair Stevens, we spent a lot of time trying to put this cannabis, Office of Cannabis Management, in the whole proposal, and I commend you for your work. I wasn't a supporter of the policy. But why do we, is this something that just got overlooked, or why is this bill necessary to make it a cabinet level position now?
Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick. The bill doesn't make OCM a cabinet-level agency. It just adds to this list of entities that have to consult with tribal entities. I can't remember exactly when we passed the consultation bill. It may have been coincident with when we passed the cannabis bill, and that might be why it was left out. But it was a big bill. there's a lot of moving pieces. It's hardly the only change we're making this year.
I believe that is correct. It was passed in state government at the same time.
Well, just to make a comment then, you know, as I said, I didn't agree with the policy of the bill. A lot of the individual structure of the bill I didn't agree with, and setting up the office has been a horrendous rollout. I have constituents that wanted to participate in the program. Just technical problems all over the place. I think the licensing lottery or whatever it was just last week was a miserable rollout. But more, you know, I have a statewide constituent, doesn't live in my district, is waiting for, he has a commercial property and wants to have somebody lease from him to be a retailer, and still hasn't gotten a license, The guy that wants to be the retailer is frustrated. The property owner is frustrated because he doesn't have, he keeps a vacant building or part of his building. And then now we hear that the tribes are going to be potentially favored to be able to compete and outside of tribal property. And I think that's just indicative of the big problems that, you know, we should have slowed down if we were going to do this and try to do this more thoughtfully, have the details ironed out. And I have concerns with this bill and in addition to just not having everything ready to go. And it just makes the faith in government and our ability to upstand new programs diminished. So a few concerns with this, but I know you're trying pretty hard and you're putting a lot of time into it. So I do appreciate that. We just have a difference of the policy.
Chair Stevenson, would you like to say anything?
You know, I know there's a lot of concerns when you roll out a new program. There's bound to be some bumps. I would note that when we passed the bill in 2023, we said it would take probably until the first quarter of 2025 to get licenses out. We would have met that goal as a state, but for a lawsuit that I don't think had any merit and a order from a judge that wasn't even based on the merits of the case but was designed to allow people to bring their case to the correct court. So if we hadn't had that court decision, we would have licenses going out right now or earlier, and we would have met the goal. And I think we were still on pace to have a functioning cannabis market in the very near future.
So thank you, Chair Stevenson. I would just like to remind people that we are discussing adding the office to the requirement that they must consult with the tribes. That is the sole intent of this bill. We're not relitigating the cannabis office itself or the bill. Were there, Representative Quam, you had a question?
Yes, I'm confused in that this has been an example of governmental incompetence. You legalizing something before you have processes put in place and et cetera. There have been repeated issues of trying to get somebody appointed. And then, you know, there are so many problems and issues trying to expand something that has obviously been an incompetent venture, especially since other states have been able to go through it with, you know, more reasonable competency. What is the justification for the expansion before you actually reach a reasonable level of competency?
Chair Stevenson.
Well, I disagree with the premise of the question. In particular, this is not an expansion of anything. This is a technical and housekeeping bill that just reflects the current practice of a state agency to consult with tribal governments and brings it in line with every other state agency. So there's no expansion here. I also strongly disagree with your characterization of incompetencies. There were factual inaccuracies in your statement. There was not repeated efforts to appoint someone to the top position. There was one. I don't know. I could say more, but I'm going to keep it to the bill. The bill doesn't expand anything. It's a technical and housekeeping bill.
Thank you. Chair Nash.
Thank you for the the conversation. I do share some of the same concerns that my colleagues do. I know this is being laid over, so we can hash this out as we're building the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any closing remarks?
Thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. And with that, House File 1310 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next, we will have Representative Bierman. Chair Bierman. I'd like to move that House File 1470 be before the committee, and it will also be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, Chair Bierman, if you'll talk to us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing House File 1470. The Subcabinet on Opioids, Substance Use, and Addiction was created with bipartisan support in the 2022 legislative session. The purpose of the Subcabinet is to bring together all the various state agencies that address substance use disorder to improve outcomes for Minnesotans, their families, and their communities. Since the appointment of its director, Mr. Jeremy Drucker, who is with us here today, in January of 2023, the Subcabinet has driven policies and agency actions to reduce overdose deaths, improve access to care for incarcerated Minnesotans, expand access to the overdose reversal drug naloxone, create recovery-friendly workplaces, and many other initiatives that cross state agency jurisdictions. When it was created in 2022, state government looked very different than it does today. DHS was a bigger agency that still contained functions that have moved to the Department of Children and Families, and DCT was also still part of DHS. The Office of Cannabis Management had not yet been created. This bill would update the membership of the Opioids, Substance Use, and Addiction Subcabinet to align with the current state government framework. Specifically, the bill adds the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, Direct Care and Treatment, the Office of Cannabis Management, which are the new entities. It also adds the Department of Commerce, which, as the regulator of private insurance market, has an important role to play in overseeing substance use parity and behavioral health needs. Each state agency has been consulted and welcomes the opportunity to join the Subcabinet. That is the bill, Madam Chair, and we stand for questions.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone who would like, anyone from the public who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll go to member discussion. Members, do you have any questions? Seeing none, Chair Nash, do you have anything you'd like? Representative Sexton, do you have a question?
It was a last minute question since I was not here for the enactment of the subcommittee or subcabinet. What outcomes have we seen thus far?
Madam Chair,
Chair Bierman, probably
the most significant in the last few years is a reduction in deaths of overdose. This is a complex issue, which with the settlements that have been coming with funding to Minnesota, there's been the establishment of task forces and the build-out of, how to address this epidemic, which affects every community across the state. So depending on your county, that's something that I would encourage you to reach out to your county and understand what they're doing with their settlement funds and how that fits into the larger picture. It is a very complex issue, though, as far as the settlement going to cities, counties, the state, and this interplay between them, trying to make a system that is cohesive and a fabric that is built together to reduce these deaths has had some initial success, particularly with the use of naloxone as an agent that is more readily available. That's something that I think from the National Congress of State Legislators that I've attended a few meetings regarding this issue, we have seen that being one of the most pertinent outcomes, and also the ability of the state to address people who are coming out of the prison system who have been addicted, who need to have a wraparound services and treatment before they exit to reduce those deaths, because there's a significantly larger number of deaths caused when people leave correction facilities and go back on the street if they haven't had treatment and adjustments in behavior. And maybe you want to add anything? No. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sexton. And to Director I would just like to say to you, thank you so much. I appreciate the work that you've done. You have a unique skill set that I really admire, and I appreciate the fact that you have been able to coordinate and collaborate and to break down those silos across agencies, and you have really helped drive the efficiencies amongst those agencies. So I just want to thank you for your great work in that area. And with that, I understand that there are no other questions, so I will thank you. And with that, House File 1470 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, if Vice Chair Bonner will take over as chair of the committee, and I will present House File 1837.
All right. Thank you. As Chair Cleburne gets settled, we do have for consideration up next a House File 1837. As a courtesy, and you are a member of the committee, would you like to move your bill, Chair Cleburne?
Thank you very much. I would move House File 1837 for possible inclusion, please.
Thank you, Madam Cleburne. We then have before us House File 1837 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Cleburne, would you like to tell us about your bill?
Well, yes, but I would also like to move the A2.
My apologies.
Right. Oh, no, that's all right. I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which makes a technical correction and correcting the site for the assistive technology, and then removing Section 6 from the bill. And I would ask for adoption of the A2, please.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne, and my apologies. I should have called that out. We do have the A2 amendment before us. Is there any discussion to the A2 amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the A2 is adopted. And now, Chair Cleburne, to your bill.
Thank you. This is the Department of Administration's technical bill, and I'll just walk through the bill really quickly so people have some idea of what it is. The Federal Assistive Technology Act, this line 2.9, you'll see just an updated reference. And this adds the Board of Aging to the list of entities that must be represented on this State Council for Assistive Technologies. On line 2.12, you'll see that there's a requirement about projects, capital projects that are exempt from project plans and anticipated costs. But it also states that that to certain committee chairs and minority leads, their recommendations or awareness are not exempt from the separate requirement to notify a similar set of chairs when the work is ready to begin. So before it was just they had to let them know that project plans and anticipated costs were there, but now they just have to notify them that the project is ready to begin. And for your information, that would include things like highway rest areas, wastewater facilities, demolition or decommissioning of state assets. Next, if we move on to line 3.2, this changes a date from July 1st to September 15th for a report, for rate changes. And then line 4.22 adds the Office of Ombudsman for Long-Term Care to have unmarked cars. And then line 4.27 and 4.29 eliminates a report that has this report is also in another similar report, if I have that correct. And it says that it has to be on the department's dashboard instead. And then the last item is a repealer at the bottom of the bill that removes the requirement for the Department of Administration to have a model local ordinance regarding outdoor light pollution. So it's a very clean bill. I'm more happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do have one testifier here today, Director Bayer, hopefully I'm saying that correctly. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Julie Byrell, and I am the Legislative Director at the Department of Administration. And Representative Cleavorn did a good job explaining the bill. I'm happy to just answer any questions.
All right. Thank you for that. All right. And with that, for questions, we do have Representative Nash. Did you want to go last, or did you want to have questions now?
You can surprise me.
Okay. All right. With that, Representative Jones has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Cleavorn, for this bill. I am curious about the repealer of the model ordinance for local ordinance for outdoor light pollution. I've worked with cities a lot, and they oftentimes don't have capacity to do more technical style ordinances, and so I'm just curious about the motivation from this for this.
Do you want me to go, or do you want to go? I can do that.
Madam Chair or Director Byrell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So admin does not have the expertise to carry out that model lighting ordinance, and we were never appropriated any funds to do that. There are existing model ordinances available from other entities, and we feel that those folks are better able to provide that.
All right. Representative Jones? All right, thank you for that. Next on the list, we have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, forgive me. Do you have your microphone on? Oh, okay, just checking. Maybe put a little closer. We just want to make sure we hear you. Yes. Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you so much, Representative Anderson. I love that question. We have actually had a presentation on office space already, and so I would ask that we please just keep the questions to the content of the bill today.
Representative Anderson.
No comment.
Okay. Any other questions from other folks? If not, we will move to Lead Nash. Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment, Chair Cleavorn. You know, we've got time. We could have answered Chair Anderson's question. We don't need to be dismissive of that. But is there a fiscal note for this bill?
Chair Cleavorn.
Not to my knowledge. It's
Has one been requested, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair, if you'd like to answer.
No, I don't understand the... I don't understand which provision you're saying would have a fiscal note.
Chair Nash.
I believe in adding, Madam Chair, Office of Ombudsman into the list of line 4.22. I think you're in adding that, isn't going to add some cost to the administration of all the things that you're doing in the bill?
Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. It is my understanding that it does not, because it just allows them to use unmarked cars. So they can continue to use the automobiles they have if that's a safety, if safety is not an issue. If safety is an issue, then they can use a car that is not marked.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, on the outside chance that they were to wish to use unmarked cars that don't exist, would there have to be the acquisition of unmarked cars? And if that's the case, then there would have to be the acquisition of unmarked cars, and there would be a fiscal implication.
I just wanted to verify there are currently cars that are unmarked that they are allowed to use. Currently, under law, they have to use a marked car. But this allows them, in cases for safety purposes, to be able to use one of the unmarked cars that is already in the fleet.
Chair Nash.
And Madam Chair, I believe this is being laid over, so we can discuss this as we're going. But thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. If there is nothing further, Chair Cleavorn, you're welcome to close.
Thank you. It's a technical bill. It will be included in our policy with the consent of Co-Chair Nash. And I just ask that it be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
All right. Then I will renew the motion to lay over House File 1837. for possible inclusion as amended. Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned with no other business before the body today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.